Jamie Marks Kors, Chris Ranji on KMOX, and it is hour number two, and we are very excited that for the next, for the foreseeable future, every Monday at 11 o'clock, we are going to have a few moments to speak with Chris Cillizza, political commentator and author of the daily newsletter, So What? You have seen him on CNN, writer for the Washington Post. You've seen him everywhere. We know you've seen Chris Cillizza, and now you get to hear him every Monday at 11 o'clock right here on KMOX, and he joins us now. How's it going, Chris?
I was told this will be a weekly St. Louis Cardinals segment. Yes. I assume that that's correct.
Well, we can start there if you want.
MLB Insider.
I am good. Thank you for asking. And thank you guys for doing this. I love it. This is my wife's, St. Louis is my wife's hometown, so I am thrilled to do it.
I don't know why I 100% thought you were going to say this is my wife's favorite show. I was like, thank you.
I haven't asked her favorite St. Louis-based radio show, so it's not. We can't rule out that it's her favorite show.
That's right. That's a great point.
If it's not, we're going to have problems.
Exactly.
So, Chris, it's been an interesting 7 days, I would say, at the very least, since President Trump reassumed office. Just your general take on the way the first week of his new presidency and how it's gone.
So, yeah, I mean, unsurprising in that he's doing a lot of the things he said he would do on the campaign trail. But I will say surprising, at least to me, in the efficiency with which the Trump White House has moved. The obvious comparison we have is to 2017. And on January 27, 2017, I covered that White House. The Trump White House was sort of trying to still figure out where the bathrooms were in the White House. You know, I mean, there was not a ton of organization. They were kind of still trying to figure it out. Most notably, Donald Trump was trying to still figure it out. That is not the case this time around. They had a very clear plan. I think they expected to win, unlike in 2016. And they are executing it, and they are doing, I'll note, a lot of the things that I think are the most politically fraught and legally fraught, birthright citizenship, pardoning January 6th defendants. They're doing that right at the start, sort of get it out of the way, and that is on purpose.
There's a lot to ask you about, but I do want to hit the pardons really quickly. Mm-hmm. The January 6th pardons, obviously, even Lindsey Graham was condemning some of the pardons for those January 6th, the people who stormed the Capitol. But I also want to add in some of Biden's pardons in his last day of the presidency, pardoning whole groups of people like allegedly nonviolent drug offenders when we know not all of those people were vetted. One, in fact, was condemned by the Senator Blumenthal out of Connecticut because it was a drug lord who murdered an 8-year-old boy and his mother to stop them from testifying, which actually was such a horrific crime. It changed Connecticut's witness protection laws. So that was a horrible one. Another one was a drug lord who poured boiling water on people. So obviously Biden was pardoning people that he didn't know what their crimes were. And all of that to say, those pardons plus the January 6th pardons, do we need to revisit or even eliminate the president's pardon power?
Man, it certainly feels like that, doesn't it? I mean, like, it just, I always say, you know, Democrats will say, well, look at what Trump did with the pardons. And Republicans will say, well, look what Biden did with the pardons. And I say, like, we should figure out a way that presidents don't have this power. Here's the problem. It's in the Constitution, and it's really, really hard to change the Constitution. I always remind people this. To amend the Constitution, you need a two-thirds vote in both the U.S. House and the Senate, and then if that happens, three out of four state legislatures in this country, 75% of the states, would need to then approve whatever had been approved by Congress. It's just such a high bar. Understandably, but I don't think the founding fathers thought this is what it should be. Sort of blanket pardons. I'll note, you didn't even mention it, but preemptive pardons by Joe Biden. You know, pardoning his son Hunter for any crime that may have been committed in a 10-year period, pardoning his two brothers and his sister preemptively. And then the Trump stuff. Look, to my mind, I think you could There are about 1,500, a little more than 1,500 people arrested on January 6, 2021. About 1,000 of them were charged with misdemeanors, trespassing, that sort of thing. I understand. You want those people, they've either served, they've been convicted. You want to pardon them. I'm not saying I support it, but I understand it. But there were 500 people who were convicted of violent crimes, including assaulting police officers. To pardon them or commute their sentences, including people like the head of the Proud Boys, you know, a white nationalist organization, Enrique Tarrio, who was in jail for 22 years. He had served 3 years of it. That seems to me to go directly counter to Donald Trump's sort of focus on the rule of law and backing the blue. So I don't think anybody, Democrat or Republican president, comes out looking even close to good in this situation.
Chris Saliza is with us here on KMOX. And aside from the pardons, there have been a number of executive orders that have happened. In fact, on the first day, there was a flurry of them, just a ton of executive orders. Just looking at them, generally speaking, do you feel like some of them make sense? Are there those that you don't really care for? How do you feel about them?
So just to your point, Trump signed 26 executive orders in his first day. And remember, he wasn't president until 12:01 p.m. on that day, right? So he only had 12 hours. He signed 26 executive orders on that day. By contrast, Donald Trump in January 20th, 2017 signed one executive order. So there was clearly a focus on this. I mean, the one that stands out to me and the one I think is most likely to be overturned, and probably the one that Donald Trump is doing more to score points with his political base than he actually thinks this is going to happen, is on birthright citizenship. Essentially saying, just because you were born in this country, if one or both of your parents were illegal, then you may not be a citizen of the U.S. Again, this is back to the Constitution. This is in the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, that if you are born in the United States, you are a citizen. I think that's going to not withstand legal scrutiny. 22 states, last time I checked, it may have gone up, but 22 states had filed appeals to it. And, you know, I think that may be more of a messaging move than an actual Donald Trump thinks it's going to happen move. Because, again, what did he run on? Tough on immigration. We need to do better than what we've been doing. We need to make some hard choices. And I guess he views that as one. In terms of being surprised, that was, I guess, the one that I was the most surprised at.
Yeah, Chris, staying on the executive branch, we talked about the pardons from both Biden and Trump, which I think both were appalling. We also talked about executive orders. Aren't we witnessing a perversion of executive power if we have all of these executive orders that are so ephemeral? They have no staying power. They don't have the heft of the Constitution that laws passed by Congress have. And so what we get then is this ping pong of presidents issuing executive orders that make their voting base happy, but then get reversed in 4 years.
Oh, I think so. Yes. I mean, perversion of the presidential executive order, it should be should have bipartisan condemnation, because there is no question that this is not how this was supposed to go. Now, I will note, Bill Clinton pardoned people, including Mark Rich, that were very controversial. George W. Bush pardoned people that were very controversial, but we didn't see the kind of all-out pardons, and certainly not at the start of a presidential term. This is usually the kind of thing that's right at the end, as Joe Biden did. But yeah, what is unfortunate to me is that our politics have become so polarized that we can't just say, you know what, both Joe Biden's use of the pardon power and Donald Trump's use of the pardon power are clearly a distortion of what the founding fathers wanted that to be. And is there a way, short of amending the Constitution, is there a way that Congress could limit that power? And you know what, unfortunately, I don't think that's a conversation we're going to have, because when Donald Trump uses the pardon power or executive orders, Republicans applaud. And when Joe Biden does it, lots and lots of Democrats applaud. And if the shoe was on the other foot, they would be condemning and condemning and condemning. And unfortunately, I think that's just a recognition of where our politics is at the moment.
As you mentioned, Chris, Donald Trump ran on immigration. It was one of the pillars of his campaign. And in this first week, he has really mobilized ICE to start to find people to have mm-hmm. them deported. Multiple flights have left the country, sending people back to their countries of origin. What do you make of his immigration policy, at least what we've seen so far?
Well, I mean, I will say, and I reminded all of my Democratic friends during the election, that a majority of the public supported the forced ex-migration of people who were here illegally. Not a majority of Republicans, a majority of the country. So in a lot of ways, he's doing what he said he would do. And I always remind people, Donald Trump during the 2024 campaign did not exactly hide the ball on immigration or anything else. Right? I mean, he was very clear on what he would do if he was elected. And he not only won all seven swing states, but he also won the popular vote. So I struggle. I think you can disagree with the policies and with the kind of hard line approach he's taken, but it's very hard for me to be shocked or surprised by it, because I do think, at least in part, that is what people voted for.
It's interesting you say that, because the numbers do show that the majority of the country is in favor, but it depends on how the question is asked. Because if you say something like, well, what if they've been here 10 years? What if they've been working? Mm-hmm. What have they been paying taxes? What if they have family here? Then that number drops a lot, and it becomes
Absolutely.
An unpopular thing. So if it's done to people who many Americans believe don't deserve it, how do you think that plays in the long run?
Right. Because I think, first of all, a quick point on polling, which is how you ask the question on anything determines the response you're going to get. Right? I mean, I think that's a very important point to note, whether it's about a head-to-head question about who do you want to win or a question like immigration. So that's point one. I think that's really a really important point for people to take away. On the second, I think Donald Trump very effectively, because he said it, I read every one of his speeches during the campaign, he said it in every speech. He said, people, the other countries, Venezuela, the Congo, they are sending people from mental institutions. They are sending their criminals over here. Now, I will note, that's never been proven out. There is no evidence that Venezuela's crime rate, which has dropped marginally, is because they're sending criminals. There is no evidence that people are sending, other countries are sending people from mental institutions. But he said it so much that I think when people, when the average American thinks of an undocumented immigrant in this country, they think of a gang member, someone who's doing something bad, someone who shouldn't be here. As you point out, it's much more complicated than that. Many of these people have been here for decades. Many of these people pay taxes, particularly as it relates to birthright citizenship. We're talking about children in many cases who have been born here. What do you do with them? So he has cast it as, well, we're going to throw all the bad people out. And of course, no one is like, yes, let's have a bunch of criminals running around our country who are here illegally. No one supports that. Kamala Harris didn't support it. No one supports that. The issue is, it's more complex than Donald Trump has positioned it on the campaign trail. And when rubber meets road, when we're talking about things like, just for example, his first administration on family separation at the border, well, then what happens then? And we're not there yet, because we're 7 days into his presidency, but I think we will get there.
That is Chris Cillizza, political commentator and author of the Daily Newsletter, So What? Chris, thank you so much for your time today. We look forward to talking to you on a weekly basis.
Can't wait. I always said, you guys are locked in now. You have to have me, even if I'm terrible on the radio.
Perfect. You're making this show better.
It's an unbreakable contract.
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
Nobody can break it.
Yes.
I'm thrilled to be on, and thank you for having me, and I'm excited to talk to you guys each week.
Awesome. That's why we set our standard low, so every guest sounds incredible.
Hell yes, man. We know how to do it.
We know how to make you sound good. Thanks,
thank you, Chris.
Thanks, y'all. Take care. I'll talk to you next week.
Chris Cillizza with us again. His political newsletter, Daily Newsletter, is called So What? You should subscribe to that. It's Amy Marks-Kors and Chris Ranji. Don't forget that you can ask your smart speaker to play KMOX or play the Chris and Amy show, and it will do it, because it has to do what you tell it to do. This is KMOX.
Monday.
We will be giving away tickets for the St. Louis Golf Expo, which happens this weekend starting on Friday at the St. Charles Convention Center. Need to be listening for your chance to win today. We'll be giving away tickets all week, by the way. You should know that. You all right over there?
Sorry. I was going to speak, and I started choking. I did mention this earlier in our top three, that a Soulard bartender was found dead in a home in Macoupin County on over the past couple of days. And so this was a bartender with Bastille, which is in Soulard. And I know they are still investigating it, but the bartender did not show up for work. And so people were concerned, and police authorities found him in a home in Macoupin County. People may also remember the bartender Peyton Keene, who was a bartender also at Bastille, who was killed in Soulard, I believe outside, you know, near outside of Soulard back in 2018. So Bastille has seen some tragedy with some of its employees.
Yeah, that's pretty awful. And so, again, they have somebody in custody. I'm curious to know exactly what happened there.
It was Chuck Perino Jr.
Yeah.
Who was the bartender who did not show up to work on Friday. And so Jeff Wicker, the co-owner of Bastille, said he was, you know, he was always a show up early kind of guy. He was a good worker, always helping. And so they knew something was wrong when he didn't just show up on Friday.
That's very, very sad. We also mentioned the FBI getting a hold of Donald Eugene Fields II, who was on the top 10 most wanted list, the FBI's 10 most wanted. And it was a local person, this Eugene Fields, this Donald Eugene Fields. We remember we talked to Jay Greenberg, yeah, who was the special agent in charge at the time here in St. Louis. And now we have somebody new who's been on the job, you know, less than a year, I guess.
Jay Greenberg was super promoted. He is in Washington, D.C.
Great guy. He's really good at his job. Got the promotion, obviously. But it's really fascinating how it's almost like the local FBI branches around the country will have people on their wanted lists, people they know of in the area, and how they sort of lobby the main FBI, you know, FBI National, basically, that, hey, you should probably put this guy or this person on the 10 most wanted.
Yeah.
Because they get a lot of attention. If you're on the 10 most wanted list, you get a ton of attention around the country. And they were successful in putting him on the list, and they have caught him.
Yeah, interesting. The FBI St. Louis division said that it was on January 25th, around 8:15 in the morning, that this horrible monster who faced child sex trafficking and child rape charges, he was arrested after a routine traffic stop in Lady Lake, Florida. That is a town about an hour northwest of Orlando. And it's interesting how these high-profile suspects, these wanted figures, seem to be arrested. Well, I don't know. I don't want to say
silly ways.
Yes, but like especially routine traffic stops. So I would be interested, is this one of those where a cop in Florida, you know how cops run plates randomly just to see what pops up, was behind this guy and ran a plate and saw that he was wanted? If this guy was speeding, what was the routine traffic stop? That's what I want to know. Does that count when they just run your plates? Or does that mean he was stopped totally randomly because he was speeding or he rolled a stop sign?
This is what's amazing, but it's human nature that if you have gone however many months or years it's been. So what? He was indicted in 2023. So now we're looking over a year and a half or so, close to 2 years that happened. Is it the kind of thing where you've just been on the loose for so long that you get complacent and you feel like, well, you know, I know I'm on the most wanted list, but I'm not going to get caught.
Like if you're on the most wanted list, don't speed.
I would think I would never drive 1 mile over a speed limit.
No.
I would come to complete stops. I would use my turn signals every single time. I would never cut anybody off.
Are you saying since you're not a wanted figure, you do all these things?
I don't know what you're talking about. That's Amy Marks-Kors. I'm Chris Ranji. Feel free to visit with us on the show, 314-436-7900. And always drop us a voice message on the Odyssey app. That's the app that you use to listen to the show live right there on your smartphone. When we come back, we'll talk some sports with Matt Pauly, KMOX's very
Allen, push from behind. I think he got it.
Well, he did not get it. He did not get it.
Narrator.
Yeah.
He did not get it.
That was from the television call, ESPN, I think. No, CBS. That was CBS.
It wasn't the Korean call. I know that.
Wait. Was it ESPN? What was it? Somebody tell me.
CBS.
It was CBS. Why would I think it's ESPN? They don't have anything. Anyway,
well,
the Chiefs won.
Help
Chiefs
us out,
won.
Matt.
Josh Allen. Hold on a second. Josh Allen came up short, allegedly. The officials ruled
allegedly
that he did not. Well, it's a bad spot.
You said it wasn't a bad spot.
I didn't say that.
Oh, Matt Pajeski said it was not a bad spot. Matt?
It wasn't bad.
Yeah.
That's all I said.
Matthew?
Yeah, we'll see.
Matthew Pauly, was it a bad spot?
Anyway, so the Chiefs win. They're going to the Super Bowl. They're playing the Eagles. Matt Pauly joins us on the guest line. Matt, so the Chiefs once again get the benefit of a call.
Was it a bad spot?
It was a questionable call.
See?
Questionable, like questionable but right, or you're being diplomatic?
They should have. What he's trying to say is they should have spotted the ball better on the field in the moment, and that way it would have stood. Yes.
What I'm saying is that it's not as cut and dry as people on either side are trying to say.
And would you say that is why the Bills lost, or would you say the Bills need to have played better?
I mean, both things are true. That goes into it, but that's just one of many plays over the entire game. If they would have played better, yes, they would have won the game.
All right, so Josh Allen did play really well yesterday. Yeah. I think both quarterbacks, it was almost exactly what you were looking for. Two quarterbacks who are at the top of the league, going at it. You almost wish that was the Super Bowl, but it's not possible because of how conferences work.
Yeah, I thought the best three teams in the NFL playoffs were the Chiefs and the Bills and the Ravens, and all three of those teams are from the AFC. So last week, that game between the Bills and the Ravens was really good, and then this week, the game between the Chiefs and the Bills is really good. So the AFC playoffs have clearly been the superior side of things. That doesn't mean that Philadelphia doesn't have a chance. Philadelphia is a really, really good team. I think any of those three teams I just mentioned would have been favored against Philadelphia.
So the Eagles and Chiefs will now play in the Super Bowl. The Kansas City Chiefs, as you would imagine, mm-hmm. 2-point favorite. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about this game?
Yeah, I think it looks like a pretty good game on paper. So I think the Eagles are the smartest team in the NFL. They are the team that they use analytics better than everybody. They just do a lot of things better than everybody. They don't have the best head coach in the league. They don't have the best quarterback in the league, and that's where you come back to Kansas City. So Kansas City's got the best coach. They've got the best quarterback. They probably have the best defensive coordinator. So I think it's a really interesting thing because this is a game that's going to feature teams that have unique strengths at the top of the league against each other, and that's going to be fun.
Hey, while we were talking about the quarterbacks in that game, of course, Patrick Mahomes, his first 7 years in the league, year one, AFC championship, two, Super Bowl win, three, Super Bowl loss, four, AFC championship game, five, Super Bowl win, six, Super Bowl win, seven, going to the Super Bowl. That is not a normal trajectory for a quarterback. That's insane. That's an insane first 7 years.
You said it. I don't know what I can add to that, Amy. It's remarkable what him and the Chiefs have been able to do. And this is a guy coming out of Texas Tech who is not like this can't-miss prospect. He was respected, but I mean, there's a lot of if you go back to it and people post these things on social media all the time, there's scouting grades from people who are very well respected in the football community who didn't think Mahomes was going to turn into to much of anything. And like Ron and I always talk about, we joke around, if he would have ended up with the Chicago Bears, he probably wouldn't have turned into anything.
Yeah.
He'd have been rubbish.
He probably wouldn't be a Bear anymore. So he went to the right spot at the right time with the right group of people, and they've turned it into something pretty darn special.
It's such an important point, Matt, that I don't think enough people, maybe the casual person, the casual fan when it comes to the NFL, doesn't quite give enough credit. And that is, if you are a good young quarterback coming out of college, you in order to be any good, you have got to be paired up with a coach that knows what they're doing. And if you're not, your career could be over.
Yes. And there's a ton of quarterbacks who came out with all kinds of hype that just completely faltered. And for some of them, it was their fault. Like Johnny Manziel, you probably could have put him anywhere and it just wasn't going to work out because he didn't have the mental makeup to be that guy.
Immaturity.
But for every Johnny Manziel, there's probably a half dozen guys who are completely mature, completely ready to do what they need to do, and they just don't have the infrastructure around them to allow them to succeed.
Yeah, it's interesting, guys like him or Ryan Leaf, who was a huge prospect, and to hear Leaf talk about it years later, that he admits he screwed up. You know, it was him. It was he had the wrong attitude, and it tanked his career. But coaching matters so much in the NFL. It might matter. In my opinion, I think it matters more than any other sport.
Especially for quarterbacks, I think it would be hard for a really, really good quarterback to overcome bad coaching.
Could not agree with you more.
There was a stat during the game last night that the Chiefs had won 16 straight one-score games, which is an NFL record. And so, of course, then they win yesterday by one score. Do you pull anything from that about the makeup of a team if this is a team that plays close games but always comes up on top?
Yeah, I mean, they just know how to win. And there's something, it's hard to quantify that. When they got the ball back, so we've got this text message with, it's Tom Ackerman, Kevin Wheeler, and our boss, Steve Moore. And I the first thing I did when they got the ball back, I said, are the Chiefs going to win via touchdown or field goal here? Like, there was no doubt. Now they scored really quick, and the ball ended up going back to Buffalo, so it didn't really work out that way. But there was no doubt. When Kansas City has the chance to win a close game late, they're going to win it. They always win it. And until they don't win one of those, I'm never going to believe that they can't win those.
All right. So we know what the matchup's going to be for the Super Bowl. We talked earlier, Matt, about what it's like to live in St. Louis, and there are a lot of Chiefs fans here. Mm-hmm. Some people who have adopted them, some people who were Chiefs fans from before the time the Rams were here when the Cardinals weren't, or maybe they were never Cardinals fans, you know? Is it better in your mind to, and the Chiefs don't really fit this bill because they're good right now, but is it better to be a fan of a team like the Buffalo Bills who constantly give you heartbreak, or to have no team at all?
Interesting question.
Like to not ride the emotional roller coaster. And we brought this up because Matt Pajeski went to the Shamrock, which is a Buffalo Bills bar in St. Louis, and he said people were beside themselves. They were distraught. Obviously euphoric when the Bills would score, but then after the game, just distraught. And he said he was jealous of their passion.
Yeah, I think I'm with Pajeski here because especially, we're talking about the Bills, a team that gets to the AFC Championship game, a team that wins a lot of games in the regular season. There's a lot more high moments than low moments. Now, it's a low moment when Kansas City knocks you out of the playoffs 4 out of 5 years or whatever it is, and that's frustrating. But I would rather go for that ride and enjoy the great moments that go along with it, because let's not discount how amazing those moments can be when you win a great game, when you win in the playoffs, whatever it might be. And I would rather experience those with the cost of feeling horrible after a game like yesterday than just not having any rooting interest whatsoever.
And it's the community that's behind it. I mean, we heard from so many people after the Rams left town that, well, their Sundays were going to be so different because maybe they gathered with friends or maybe they tailgated with the same people every time. You build a community, and we're talking about Scott Jagow here at KMOX, who is the resident Buffalo Bills fan who goes to the same bar every Sunday, and it's full of Bills fans. That's camaraderie. That's community. And when your team leaves you, you lose all of that. So it goes well beyond sports.
Yeah, my life would be different if I would not have had Rams games with my dad every Sunday. Like, that was part, you know, growing up in St. Louis, that was at the age that I'm at, that was part of the routine. And, you know, if they're playing at noon, you go to church, you go to early service at church because you can be home for kickoff, you know, things like that. I got to go to each of the Super Bowls with my dad. Like, I just think of all these amazing times of just sitting there watching football. And I am sad that people in St. Louis don't have that right.
Yeah, my grandma had season tickets for the Rams, and she would go with the same people every week. And, you know, you sit in the same seats and you get to know the people who are around you and, you know, you get to be friends with them. Like, it's, I know that some people will scoff at sports and say, why do you care so much? What's with all the passion? It's insane. And there was an author, somebody with a PhD years ago when I was in college, we had to read this book. And I cannot remember the name of the book. I wish I could. But in the book, he was talking about sports fandom and how it's literally insane that you devote so much of your energy and effort into it. And I remember reading it feeling really bad about myself.
What?
Like, what do you mean? So I guess I'm crazy.
That's
all
why
right?
It's called a
this
fan,
sucks.
A fanatic.
But there are times when a season gets done and like maybe I go, okay, we're going to do this again in 6 months. Like, what's going on here?
But like Ronj always
says. But 6 months is a good amount of time to recover.
As frustrating as it can be to get angry Cardinals texts or callers right on a sports open line, Ronj always says it is so much better to have angry fans than apathetic fans. You don't want fans not caring.
Even you, Matt, who you do a post game show for a beloved baseball team with a giant fan base, even you can admit it's better to have anger than apathy.
Yes. With the caveat that sometimes the irrational anger from some people is a little over the top.
What's it make you want to do when they're irrationally angry? Do you want to?
I'm just glad they're listening to my show.
You want to swear at them?
I'm losing it,
Matt. This is look. Winter warm up is over. We are how many weeks away from what's the report date again? 12th.
It's the 11th or the 12th. I go out on the 10th. I know that. The day after the Super Bowl, okay. I'm on a flight to Jupiter.
Okay, so you're heading to Jupiter, second week of February.
Yeah.
You know, so this is the time. If you have something to say to Cardinals fans, say it.
Love you guys. Well, I mean, Cardinals fans are great. Like, you're trying to paint me in some sort of... There are times where I get frustrated with a very small percentage of people who choose to call my show. I'm glad they call my show. I'm glad they listen to my show. Don't be doing this thing where you're trying to make me out to, like, go after a fan base. I love Cardinals. I grew up a Cardinals fan.
I live this life, man. I live the life you're living with people
you
who are much
love
crazier.
It, though. You love trolls. Engaging with trolls.
Well, I sure. But there were, and I agree with Matt to this extent. I'm going to tell you right now, the Cardinals fan base is larger by many times over. But there's something clearly insane about White Sox fans. They're literally crazy.
Not as crazy as Eagles fans.
The hardcore.
It's a different kind of crazy.
But I'm telling you that I got in the same sort of moods that you would get in, Matt, where you just like, you just want to strangle people.
Yeah. Well,
it
would
happen to me.
I know this was, I think Kevin Wheeler told this story, and not that we have to tell the whole thing, but I love insane fans when they're for different teams, like not my team.
Yes.
Like when the Yankees won the World Series. They hadn't even had the parade yet.
Well, there was that caller to their radio show.
They hadn't had the parade yet, Matt. And this caller goes, I'm glad they won. But if they think that next year they can just sit on their coattails, they hadn't had the parade yet. And he was like, if management thinks that they can just sit on their coattails and not make changes for next season,
I love it. And taking a 10,000-foot view of all the insane, bat-spit, crazy White Sox fans I dealt with, I love all of them. I miss them.
Yes.
But in the moment, it's like, guys, calm down or I'm going to have to murder all of you.
Without the murdering part, I agree with you 100%.
All right. Matt Pauly, Sports Open Line tonight starting at 6. You got a short one because of the SLU coaches show, yes?
Yes. So I'm on 6 to 7. Blair Kirchhoff from the Kansas City Star going to join us tonight.
Awesome. We appreciate it. We will talk to you on Wednesday. Thanks, Matt.
Sounds good. Yep.
Oh, really?
Yo, Paulie! There you go. This is with me. I'll call you back later. See ya!
That is Matt Paulie, our sports fella, joining us here on KMOX. And I will admit, I do take pleasure in watching Matt get frustrated with some of the Cardinals callers.
Is that because
or the texters? It's because I did it.
Yeah.
It's because I did it.
Could not do it. I would just hang up.
Well, you have
boring.
To you also have to remember that the people who call mm-hmm. into shows, sports shows,
aren't normal.
Or text,
yeah.
They're not the typical Cardinals fan.
Yeah.
They are hyper. They're cranked up to an 11.
But people who call our show are normal.
Very normal, great, wonderful
great people. The more you call, the more voice messages you leave and texts. Incredibly normal and well-behaved.
Yeah, leave us a voice message on the Odyssey app. Stop calling that number that we used to have because we're not checking it anymore. If you want to leave a voice message, you have to download the app and do that. Amy Marks Kors, Chris Ranji on KMOX.
Ranj? Are we givers?
Yeah.
We are givers. We're generous.
Yeah, we are very generous.
So we are...
And...
Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, keep listening. Not now. Just be careful.
Yeah.
Not now. However, at some point during this show, we will give away tickets to the Golf Expo at the St. Charles Convention Center.
St. Louis Golf Expo starts this Friday. It is, as Amy said, at the St. Charles Convention Center.
Yep.
And it goes through the end of the weekend. We are giving away tickets all week. Mm-hmm. So pair of tickets today, pair of tickets every day for the rest of the week. And you do have to be listening for your chance to win those tickets. Text messages to the show at 314-436-7900. And it is, by the way, a good idea to remember that number because we need your Monday regrets.
Oh, boy, do we ever. We need your regrets. What do you regret? It could be you thought of it from your entire life, or it could be just over the weekend.
Yeah, something that happened over the weekend or something that mm-hmm. happened since last week, since the last time we did Monday Regrets. Here's your opportunity to vent. We want you to do that. Talking about sports, this text message says, Chris, Amy has a good attitude because she appreciates the sport and the talent as opposed to you, who stays with just looking at a team and saying they're mine.
Oh, that caller gets it. Texter
no,
gets it.
That's what's great about sports.
I have a great
sports.
Attitude.
That's what's great about sports.
What's great about sports is the athleticism.
No, the great thing is to adopt a team
yeah.
and then to be joyful when they win and to DM them when they lose and say, you cost me a lot of money, you bastard. That's the best thing about sports.
Is it?
True.
I still cannot believe the NFL is a level of athleticism that does not make sense to me. And if you are on the field, like watching on the sidelines, that's really the only way to appreciate how big and fast and freakish these guys are. I cannot believe there are enough superhuman freaks to make a league.
There was
They're
that,
so
there,
amazing.
There's that question that was posed, and I don't have the exact dollar figures right, but it was something like, would you mm-hmm. rather have $10,000 tax-free right now or the possibility of $1 million if they put you on a football field right now and they gave you four downs to gain 5 yards?
I would be hit off of the planet.
Yeah.
I would just explode in center.
Could you gain 5 yards?
No.
With a fresh set of downs?
No.
So you take the $10,000?
The average NFL play would kill me. It's a death sentence every single play. Those guys are incredible. I would take the $10,000.
Your Monday regrets, let us know what they are. This is your time to submit them via the Odyssey app. You can send us a message. You can send us a text message. What do you regret over the weekend or the last week? Tell us. It's Chris and Amy on KMOX.